So one of the things that I wanted you to talk to the community about, so Clay and I met a couple of months ago, and I started talking about this event, and then an hour went by, and I learned so much about the history of West Seattle. And I just thought, what an incredible experience that only I get to have in this coffee shop. So I wanted them to come and talk a little bit about what we had talked about. And one of the specific things, Clay, that you really edified me about was the significance of this particular location in the history of the development of West Seattle. Can you tell everybody a little bit about the importance of this particular location?
Well, sure. First of all, though, I got to say there's about 20 people in this audience, maybe 30, who ought to be up here instead of me. They lived this a lot longer than I did, and it's an honor to be in your presence. There are a lot of friends out there, so I'm looking forward to chatting with you afterward. It's my contention that transportation really is, it's at least one of the fundamental forces in our life, if not the fundamental force. I mean, if you get philosophical about it, you know, if you just stand still and don't go anywhere, don't transport yourself anywhere, you die. I mean, transportation is about life and how we as a society decide how we're going to transport ourselves is a huge guidance to where we live, where we shop, where we have fun, where we do everything. And so in that context, you have to go back to the 19th century. Actually, you know, you can go back thousands of years. The Duwamish tribe was here. And when you think about it, most of the activity on this peninsula, our West Seattle Peninsula, was down along the water. And even after the settlers came in 1851 on Alki, and most, if not all of you know that story, the life for the next three or four decades focused on the waterfront, whether it was housing, whether it was industry, you know, lumber mills, just all kinds of activity. And where we are now was woods. It was just plain woods. It had been undeveloped. Until the late 1880s, there was a company, and even, despite its name, it was based in downtown Seattle, called the West Seattle Land and Improvement Company. And the reason this was developed up here was because of, you know, developers wanting to sell land here. So what they did is they instituted something called it was the first ferry on Puget Sound. And the City of Seattle ferry was that first ferry, and it came from downtown to the foot of, roughly the foot of Ferry Avenue and California Way today. And during low tide, you can see the pilings for that ferry. Just real close, just a little bit north of the water taxi today. And that was the way that they devised, this company devised, to get people over here, and they only charged 5 cents. And you could come over to West, well, why would you come to West Seattle? 5 cents is pretty cheap even back then. Well, what they did, they also did, was they created a cable car line that went up Ferry Avenue and circled what we now know as the North Admiral District. And Andrew has a copy of West Side Story, our history book of the area that came out 32 years ago. It's history now, too.
Honored by this guy. Well, one of the reasons he's up here, let's be honest.
I didn't write the whole thing. Somebody had to drive the bus. That's about the thing. And in there is a map where you can see the precise route of that cable car. And that included the diagonal Ferry Avenue that runs right by this church. So, you know, this was the vortex of this cable car line. And the reason they wanted to get people up here on the cable car line is to see land. And we have evidence in the 1890 edition of the so-called West Seattle Gazette, which said on its cover that it had a circulation of 10,000, and I'm a little leery of that. But it had a big display ad for lots that were going for $200 a piece. How would you like that? And this began a real snowball of development in what you might call Upper West Seattle, above the water. And West Seattle above the water really developed from north to south. Shortly after then, of course, the church was built, and there developed a municipality called the City of West Seattle. It started small on Alki, and then it grew and grew, and by 1907 it had encompassed the whole peninsula, and just a few months later we annexed to the City of Seattle in 1907. We were a city of our own for 5 years, and during those 5 years, the cable car shut down, and instead, from Harbor Avenue came the first streetcar. Actually, it was the first streetcar owned by a city in the whole country, which is kind of mind-blowing. You would think that would have come long before in the East, but we had the first city-owned streetcar system in the nation. It came up California Way and California Avenue in 1904. And then they kept extending it south and extending it south to the point of where in 1907, a very key year for West Seattle in a lot of ways, another line came up from the east called the Fauntleroy Line, and where the Fauntleroy Line and the West Seattle Line met, and the Fauntleroy Line took a left and headed south down to, many of you know about the little community past Fauntleroy called Endoline, end of the line. But where the Fauntleroy Line and the West Seattle Line met, they officially called it in 1907 the Junction. Hence, we have the name for our main business district. And things grew from there. But what Andrew wanted you to really understand is that you're sitting at the beginning of all of this, right where we are now. And it's because of the visionaries that created a transportation system for us all.
Awesome. And so one question I want to ask is, you know, West Seattle's continuing to grow. We're all seeing this expansion. Folks moving into the area, realizing how amazing this place is to live. As you watch the expansion and growth of West Seattle, what are you looking for or hoping for over the next 60 years?
Well, how come you picked 60 years? I was kind of wondering that.
Well, I guess 60 years is I'm thinking this building.
Are we all going to be here then? That's right. One of my favorite phrases is, every car on the road is a used car. Like, once you take a photo, it's no longer a now, it's a then, you know. Things are changing all the time, and we can't stop change. In fact, change is really part of the transportation metaphor. We move around, we grow, and we change. That's life. I would hope for is some of what we've already achieved only extended into the future. I mean, 60 years from now, I mean, most of us will be gone. And so I think this really represents a projection of hope. You know, hope is a key concept here and in all of our lives. And we can express that hope by preserving some of the some of the edifices, some of the gathering places that have been important over the years. Now, you know, some of you know that I was the executive director of the Historical Society for 5 years, and I've been involved since it started in 1984, and quite unusual. You know, historical societies skew older, and here I was in my mid-30s, and somehow just because of my love of the area, I jumped right in. And all through that time, landmarking buildings has been a huge part of the identity of the Historical Society. And even recently, the two crown jewels of the Junction, we just got landmarked a couple of years ago. The Campbell Building and the Ham Building, where Cupcake Royale is, and the Easy Street Records. Those buildings, ostensibly, will never be torn down. You know, the mantra or spiel I used when I was ED of the Historical Society, I really believe is true, which is we can't save everything. We don't want to save everything. Life is changing. But we have to save the good stuff. And the real conversation is, what is that good stuff? You know, it's incredibly subjective. You know, the landmarking rules for the city. Thank goodness the city has a landmark ordinance that was put in the late 1970s, a very strong one, so strong that anybody in this room, any of us, can nominate a building to be landmarked. And it doesn't mean that nothing will happen to the building. You can't change a millimeter of it. It's more, if you want to make a change, you have to go back to the Landmarks Board and get their approval. Well, you can even landmark a building in Seattle without the owner's consent. That's a strong law, and it has been upheld by the state Supreme Court. And this has been a tool that has allowed us to preserve some of the most beloved places in West Seattle. How many of you have been to a film at the Admiral Theater the last 30 years? You wouldn't have been able to do that if we hadn't landmarked that in 1989. And there are many other examples. The Alki Homestead, like the buildings in the Junction, and it's all over the city. And this is one of the things that I would hope is that people get involved in heritage preservation. It takes time, it takes money, it takes passion. And, you know, like I said, it's subjective, but the city ordinance has a list of criteria. There are six criteria, and if you meet one of them, you can get a building landmarked. If you meet more than one of the six, you have a better case. But beyond the government, there is just stewardship of our own property, our own homes, or our own community businesses. Some people say the best preservation is done by the people who own the building and who care about it and love the building and keep it up and decide that that is a guiding force in their life, that they want to, it's legacy stuff. They want to leave something for the people we will never see or know. Now that is vision and that is hope.
Amen. Thank you so much. So thinking about this idea of legacy, thinking about this idea of what we want to impact folks into the future, I wanted to leave you with this question. In what West Seattle settings have you felt most connected to others? Where have you felt like you were part of community, you were part of something bigger than yourself, something that had legacy, had legs? And I want you to just take a minute and think about not only where was that, but what was it about that space? What was it about the physical space? What was it about the ethos of the space? What was it about the commitments that the people who were there made, that made that feel like a space that you could get connected to other people?
Andrew, could I add a corollary, just very briefly? You may notice that the examples that I have mentioned for landmarking all are public places. They're not owned publicly, but there were a lot of people go in and out. That's by design. There are a lot of beautiful homes that should be preserved, but it is very hard to mount a landmark campaign for a building that few people have gone inside and fallen in love with. That's why we have the Admiral Theater. That's why we have the buildings in the Junction. So that's as much a political strategy as anything, but that may relate to this question, where do you feel most connected? It's the places you've been most often.
How many of you know about this play on words, the night the ship hit the span? Yeah, y'all have heard this before. I had not heard this until I sat down and talked to Clay about it, and this is such a fascinating story, so I wanted him to come up and tell it again. It's like a classic West Seattle story. For those of you that have been here forever, you already know it, but for those of you who haven't heard it before or haven't heard it from this guy, we come back up here, Clay? You want to grab that mic? So as you all know, West Seattle is kind of a space apart, right? People look at the city, but don't often go into the city, right? Like we're Seattle-ish, right?
It's an island.
Yeah, it's definitely got an island culture to it. And the bridge is this both iconic and literal connection between West Seattle and the rest of the city. But before the bridge existed, the current bridge, there was this real tension, not just this kind of sense of, oh, Seattle's too far away. I don't really want to drive over there and deal with all of their traffic. But actually, like, we're not part of the same city. And so I just wanted you to talk a little bit about the history of the secession movement that actually came about here in West Seattle to secede after having been annexed in 1917. And the role of the bridge. Oh, excuse me, 1907. And the role of the bridge in reconnecting West Seattle to the greater Seattle.
Yeah, and this story is certainly something that people in this room, many of you, lived through. And so who am I to tell you? Because I was down in Oregon. I got my journalism training at the U of O, and then I was fortunate to work for the Oregonian for 8 years, and then another year and a half for the Gazette Times in Corvallis before coming up here in 82. Well, this had already happened. but this is not only a history thing, this is something that affects today. I mean, this feeling pervades, and it's because of our geography. I ask you all to take your right hand. This is a trick I've learned long ago. And for anybody who you know who is not from Seattle, you can use this, and they'll get it right away. Take your right hand and put it out in the air and look at the back of your hand. Well, the rest of your hand is the rest of Seattle. The thumb is West Seattle. That's the whole thing. Some people call it the reverse Michigan. Anyway, I would argue that the whole story of West Seattle is how do you get from the thumb to the hand? It's been that way since time immemorial. And, you know, we are used to the bridge. I still call it the new bridge, by the way. How many here still call it the new bridge? You know, there have been 12 bridges across that corridor, and the early bridges, you may not realize this, you think of Soto and the industrial area and all of that, that was mud. It was mud flats. It was widespread to go from here to Beacon Hill was, it seemed like an eternity, and it went far south. And the Duwamish River is pretty straight river right now, but that's because the Army Corps of Engineers did that 100 years ago. Before then, it was a piece, yeah, Joanne, you're right, it was a piece of spaghetti. It went around and around, and you can still see evidence of what they call oxbows in the river that remain. And so to get from downtown to here was a big, big deal. Sometimes it took all day for people to drive around when cars came in. Anyway, to bring it back to this, and it's so nice to see that photo. That's from the West Seattle Herald. That's the front page of the Herald the week after the Saturday night ramming of the bridge. And this was the Monday morning commute. And it says it all right there. West Seattle, the later bridges, the two that, if you're of a certain age, you remember, were built in 1924 and 1930. They're called bascule bridges. Bascule is French for teeter-totter. You know, they go up and down like this. And we still have four of those in the city up along the Ship Canal. You know, Ballard and Fremont and University and Montlake. Well, we had so many people here, we had two of them. One was built in 24 and one was built in 30, and this is the streetcars ran on them, and this was huge. But the one thing, and you all who are here can verify this, you couldn't tell people how long it would take you to get downtown. Well, I might be there in 20 minutes. Well, I might be there in an hour. Depends on the bridge. And the reason that that's the case is that these bridges were low to the water, just like the ones we know on the Ship Canal, and have to open for ship traffic. And the Duwamish River, which was widened, deepened, and straightened by the Army Corps of Engineers, was renovated, if you will, for industrial use. A lot more ship traffic goes along the Duwamish than the pleasure boats along the mostly pleasure boats along the Ship Canal up north. So it was an unpredictable thing. And over the decades, people got increasingly frustrated. And by the 1970s, so frustrated that they were pressuring City Hall. Some of you remember this. I mean, there were proposals. There was a vote to vote on a new West Seattle bridge. There was a scandal absconding with money, city official. There was, promises by politicians to build a new bridge or not, or a maybe. And these pressures had come to a boil to the point where, half in jest but really half seriously, the West Seattle Chamber of Commerce in early 1978 started a movement to secede from the rest of the city. West Seattle would become its own city again. Now you might think, well, how would you do that? Well, you create a petition to put on the ballot that West Seattle would secede, and you gather signatures. And the rationale was this. If you think about it, what the bridge is, it's no different from a street. It's just a street. It's not any kind of a designated highway. And so the chamber leaders thought that if West Seattle seceded and were its own city, it would be possible to get money by going, the city of Seattle and the city of West Seattle both going to Olympia and saying, look, we need a highway between the largest city in the state and the fourth or fifth largest city in the state. I mean, we're that big. That was the rationale. And big press conference, it never would have happened. Because for a chunk of a city to secede, you have to have the vote of the entire city. And what city is going to vote away a fourth of its tax base? It just never would have happened. But it was a great publicity stunt. Mm-hmm. And they had gathered half the petitions they needed to get it on the ballot when the greatest pun in West Seattle history happened, which was Saturday, June 14th. Jay, you're looking skeptically at me. Am I lying? Okay, good. Late that Saturday night in June, one of the many ships going up and down the Duwamish was the Chavez. It was filled with gypsum, huge boat. If you were back in that time and watched the bridge go up, it wasn't like some little sailboat going through. These boats would fill most of the space between the spans of the bridge, and you would wonder how in the heck they were going to get there, and they had tugboats easing them along. Well, the pilot of the Chavez, this is a ginormous boat, ship, was 80-year-old Rolf Neslin, who reportedly had been drinking and fell asleep. This is after midnight. And in what was later called a mysterious 10-second lapse of concentration, the Chavez listed to the east, and you can imagine the two bridges, the spans were up, and it listed to the east, and it rammed the east side of the north span, sticking it open. And, you know, the tugboats couldn't prevent this. And the two bridges were four lanes each. So instantly, we had a stuck bridge, and instantly, as you see in that photo, we went from eight lanes to four lanes. That became a transportation emergency. And the ability to go to the federal government and get $150 million from Warren Magnuson, the head of the Appropriations Committee, came into being, and then the city and the county and the port chipped in 10 each, and it was, I believe, more than $180 million project. At that time, the biggest city public works project ever to build the bridge. This was in 1978. The wheels of government moved very quickly to get the bridge starting to be built in 1980. And there are people in this room who remember, for 4 years, we had the most Byzantine detours that seemed to change every single week to get from downtown to here and back. But then by November of 83, the eastbound lanes opened, and in July of 84, the westbound lanes opened, and we had our West Seattle Bridge. Now, you can say there are a lot of positive elements of that, but there's also some challenges. When I was at the Herald, I was there, I got to go inside those big beams when the bridge was getting closer and closer to being joined, and do stories in 82, 83, 84. And it was clear that this bridge was going to change West Seattle. Now, I always argued that West Seattle looked a whole lot more like 1950 than any other part of the city. Well, At the Herald, we had a brilliant editorial cartoonist, David Kelleher, and on the week the bridge opened, we had an editorial cartoon showing in the foreground one of the little houses at the foot of Admiral Way, looking at the bridge in the background. And in the background, all these cars and trucks, and I never forget, one of the pickups had a condo in the back of the pickup truck. And this husband and wife were in this house, and the husband's sitting inside reading the paper, and the wife's leaning out the window, and she says, "Hold on to your hat, Harold, they've opened the bridge." Yes, Joanne.
Very cool.
There you go. Well, as Andrew will tell you, the bridge is a very physical thing, but it's also a symbol.
Absolutely. And my favorite part about this story is if you're a sleepy 80-year-old, you can still make huge changes in the world.
Well, there's a whole other story about Rolf's demise, Rolf Neslin, but we won't go into
there
that
we
now.
Go. There we
Look
go.
Look in the book.
So my question to you is kind of looking at this legacy of this literal and figurative connection to the rest of the city, where are you hopeful that more bridges, literal or figurative, are in the process of being built to help connect folks in this community?
Well, gee, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I think heritage preservation is one of those bridges. And that's not just a convenient statement. Many of you have been here around a long time. There's some faces I don't recognize, and I suspect that some of you have only been here a few years. That doesn't make you any less valid or less West Seattle than anybody else. Change is a fact of life. We all have, I like to say, we all have a landing story, just like the settlers who landed on Alki Beach. We all landed here one way or another. We either were born here or we moved here for some reason. And the stories are all different about how that happened for each of us. But there's a common thread. And the common thread is that sooner or later, we all come to love this place. And whether you've been here for, you know, 60 years or 60 days, it doesn't matter. This place grabs you. I think this is a more special place than anywhere. I like to say West Seattle is the best Seattle.
Get here and we'll do the rest.
And I get kidded for that, saying, well, don't say that. You're going to bring more people here, you know. But West Seattle is it's obvious because of the geography and because of the... My mom used to say every other house in West Seattle has a view. Because of the topography, it's not just the geography. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to build bridges between the long-timers and the newcomers. Mm-hmm. Because everybody, we all were a newcomer at one point or another.
That's right.
And the real bridge that holds us together is what you were referring to earlier. It's these gathering places, these places that where we cross paths with each other, and we, you know, I like to say we're not supposed to be hermits in this world. We're supposed to engage each other and connect with each other and inspire each other. And how do you do that? You do that by getting out of your home and crossing paths with people at various places. Well, those places are vital to a community. And building bridges between, I mean, you all read these articles in the Times lately, and it's been around for a long time, this concept of a Seattle freeze. I think that's, it's just kind of a bit of a hype, but, you know, to write about it. But if that exists, we got to build that bridge too. And how do we do it? We don't build walls, we build bridges, you know? And so the biggest thing in our history and in the West Seattle Bridge, I believe, is a potent symbol for us all as we go forward to build bridges between and among each other.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, sir.